from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Decades ago, economist John Maynard Keynes argued that government deficits can boost economic growth. Suddenly, an unlikely Keynesian, George W. Bush, must be praying that Keynes was right. Last night, in his State of the Union address, the president stood up for war, for tax cuts, for billions for AIDS in Africa, and for economic growth. Tonight, On Point, the hole in that donut, federal deficits. They're back, they're big, and they're growing. Does it matter? We begin with concerns in Washington about the return of red ink, with a projected federal deficit as high as $300 billion if the Bush economic stimulus package goes into effect. Even some members of the Bush economic team will be anxiously watching the growth-deficit trade-off. Greg Ipp is an economics editor for The Wall Street Journal. He joins me now from Washington. Good evening and welcome, Greg Ipp.
Good evening, Tom.
Greg, thanks for being with us. You have written about a new raft of economic advisors coming on board with President Bush who have records of opposition to deficit spending, to federal deficits. Who has said what, and what are they saying now that they're in the midst of an administration that is professing not to be too worried about deficits?
Sure, Tom. Well, Steve Friedman is the new National Economic Council director, and he was on the board of the Concord Coalition for many years, and the Concord Coalition is probably the most stridently anti-deficit organization in Washington. You have John Snow, who was chairman of CSX Corporation, and when he headed the business round table, he was also very strongly in favor of a balanced budget amendment, and he warned that if we didn't bring deficits down, we would be stuck with very high interest rates.
Now he's nominated to be Treasury
Secretary.
He's
going to be Treasury Secretary soon, so he'll have to get on board with an administration that really feels that deficits aren't a big deal. And finally, at some point this year, Glenn Hubbard, the chairman of the Council of Economic Advisers, is expected to step down and go back to teaching at Columbia. And the front runner to replace him is Greg Mankiw at Harvard University there in Boston. And he has written a great deal about deficits, and most of it is negative, saying, yes, deficits do crowd out investment, and they tend to push up interest rates. It'll be very interesting to see how these gentlemen adjust those longstanding views of criticism of deficits to an administration that has basically said that deficits and balanced budgets are not a priority.
Greg Ipp, remind us of how fierce the attacks on deficits were in the 90s, the arguments that were made, and what's the new view being put out by the Bush White House?
Well, it's not just the 90s, Tom. It goes back to the 80s. I mean, do you remember the Graham-Rudman Balanced
Sure.
Budget Act? Do we remember all the devices that Congress tried, PAYGO and the Budget Enforcement Act, all these mechanisms they put in place to try and get a hold of this giant elephant that was consuming the government? And it was only in the late 90s, as the economy boomed and the stock market roared ahead, that people began to relax, as we had this flood of revenue coming into the Treasury, largely from things like capital gains in the stock market and the income tax people paid on their stock options. We now know, Tom, that a lot of that was very temporary, and when the stock market boom went away, so did the surpluses.
So what does the deficit picture look like now?
It looks pretty bad, but the numbers might be a little bit look worse than they actually are. For example, the Congressional Budget Office said today that the deficit in this year, this fiscal year, will probably be about $200 billion. Now, the administration says if you include all their proposals, such as the new tax cuts they want, it could be $300 billion, which would be a record. The largest it ever was I believe, $290 back in 92. But as a share of the economy, which is what you really want to look at because it's the size of the economy that tells us how well we can support this debt,
right,
it's not that large. It's only about 3% of GDP, and it was 6% back in 1982.
What's the justification or the rationale given for not being concerned about this today?
Well, the reason you don't hear this administration worrying a lot about deficits is quite simply because they have other priorities. First of all, they want to get the economy going, and nobody can really disagree with that. As you pointed out, that's a very good, solid Keynesian notion that we've been living with for many decades, and there aren't many people who disagree with that. You don't want to be slashing government programs and hiking taxes in the middle of a recession. It would only make things worse. On the contrary, you might want to actually cut taxes or increase spending to try and tide us over. And then when good times come back, you want to sort of reverse those actions and quickly move back to a balanced budget.
So how should Americans look at this? Should we get on board with President Bush and say, hey, the deficits are just the price of a downturn, it'll all work out in the end?
You know, Tom, I think that Americans probably wouldn't have much to worry about if this was just a temporary thing. You know, if we were being told, look, we're going to run some red ink this year just while the economy like gets over its soft spot and while we pay for the temporary expenditures of the war on terrorism, the war in Iraq, But quite frankly, that's not what we're being promised. The president is asking for tax cuts that continue for quite a few years. He's asking for a $400 billion prescription drug plan over the next 10 years. We have the gigantic problem of all the baby boomers retiring, and that starts in just 7 or 8 years. We have no long-term plan to deal with any of these things in a situation where we've asked for tax cuts, and we have unknown costs associated with the war on terrorism and a possible war with Iraq to deal with. So this year, no, I don't think Americans have to worry. But for the out years, yeah, I think we've got something to worry about.
Well, there's a picture. Greg Ipp, thanks very much for painting it for us.
Okay, Tom, always a pleasure.
Greg Ipp is economics reporter with The Wall Street Journal. He spoke with us from Washington.
Lower taxes and greater investment will help this economy expand. More jobs mean more taxpayers and higher revenues to our government. The best way to address the deficit and move toward a balanced budget is to encourage economic growth and to show some spending discipline in Washington, D.C.
Last night, President Bush laid out his big agenda. Can we have it all? War, tax cuts, deficits, jobs, and growth. Or will we have to choose? Is the president's fiscal policy adding up for you? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me tonight from New York is Mark Zandi, chief economist with economy.com. Good evening and welcome, Mark Zandi.
Good evening.
Thanks for being with us. Mark Zandi, you listened to the president last night. You see everything that's on the table here. We want to look at this formula for jobs and growth tonight and look at it in light of, and war, we shouldn't forget that, it's expensive, and look at the deficits that seem to be coming along with it and ask how they all add up. Is it making sense to you? Is this a package that hangs together?
No. I think it's going to be very difficult to pay for all the things that were proposed last night and also pay for the things that the tax cuts, the large tax cuts that were put into place a little over a year ago. And the problem isn't now. We can support the deficits that exist today. The problem is 5, 10, 15 years from now. We're going to have perennially large deficits that ultimately are going to lead to higher interest rates, which are corrosive on the economy's ability to grow long run. So we are going to have to make some very significant choices. It may not be this year, it may not be next year, but at some point in the next decade, some hard choices will have to be made.
Response to the president's offering has been all over the place because, of course, you've got Keynesians who live on all ends of the political spectrum. How does this fit into a kind of Keynesian view of the world? The idea there is when you're down and out, deficit spend to rev the economy back up and you'll be all right. Is the president following a classical Keynesian course out of recession here or something new, something different?
Well, he's doing two things. He is proposing some tax cuts that are very Keynesian in their nature, meaning they're temporary. They are intended to help stimulate the economy in the very near term, provide a boost to the economy. But he's also proposing a number of things with big price tags long into the future, and that's not Keynesian. That's arguably more supply side, I suppose, than Keynesian. So it's a combination of both those things, and that's to some degree why it's a bit confusing.
Take us back into the lingo here. Supply side is back in this season as a concept, and you're drawing the distinction between that and John Maynard Keynes' view. Fill that out for us.
Yeah, sure. Let's do it by taking his stimulus plan proposal for economic stimulus. It really is two plans. The first is the elimination of taxation on dividends. The second are all these other sundry other tax cuts that he's proposing, and many of them would take effect this year. Mm-hmm. That would include everything from a child tax credit rebate to accelerating some tax cuts we're supposed to get in 2004, 2006 into this year.
This is where the president talks about a family with a $47,000 income and four children paying little or nothing in taxes.
Exactly. The tax cuts, excluding the dividend income elimination part of it, add about $100 billion to the economy in the first year after which they're passed. And if that part of the plan were passed quickly, let's say the next couple, 3 months, I think it would be very helpful to the economy. It would stimulate demand, and that's a very Keynesian kind of proposal. Mm-hmm. elimination of taxation on dividend income, though, is not Keynesian at all. It's more of a supply side argument. The argument there is that if you increase the after-tax return to investing in stocks, in this case, dividend-paying stocks, you will induce more investment. That investment will generate more jobs. The increase in jobs will create tax revenues. The tax revenues will be more than enough to pay for the cuts in the dividend income tax. That's a supply side argument, which I think is wrong and won't work.
So you don't see growth emerging from this policy that will then rev up revenues and put us back on an even keel. Why not?
Well, and the tax cuts, excluding the dividend income tax, I think that's useful and that would help stimulate the economy, although there are better plans. And we could talk about those if you'd like. The Democratic plan, I think, is a superior plan. But nevertheless, the president's tax cuts would be useful if passed. The elimination of the dividend income tax wouldn't be that helpful. It has benefits. The benefits are it reduces the leverage that corporations will use. It will help in terms of corporate governance. It leads to a more efficient economy in the long run. But unfortunately, it will also lead to large deficits, which mean higher interest rates. And those negatives will offset the benefits that I just talked about. Mm-hmm. Net-net, we're not going to be any better off 10 years from now or 20 years from now from this. So the problem isn't the elimination of dividend taxation per se. Mm-hmm. It's the way it's been structured in the president's plan, and that results in large deficits going forward.
And you're describing, in effect, the president's plan then as ideological rather than necessarily practical in terms of fueling long-term economic growth. I guess that means simply that you, Mark Zandi, are not a supply-sider.
You got that right. And, the administration does believe in the value of this, and it is a matter of legitimate debate. There are opposing views. So I don't know that I'd call it ideological, but it's certainly worth debating.
Can we look back to the Reagan years as instructive, as an example of something that's gone before here? What happened then? We had supply-side economics, we had a lot of military spending, and we had big deficits. Is it a parallel experience?
No, primarily because we have to consider where we were at the start of the Reagan administration. Tax rates were substantively higher than they are today. The top marginal tax rate was well over 50%. Mm-hmm. I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was extraordinarily high. And you could argue that lowering tax rates would result in increased work and investment, and the supply side arguments made more sense then. But we went through the Reagan tax cuts and other tax cuts, and marginal tax rates are a lot lower today. And it's just a lot more difficult to make the argument that if you cut them further, you're going to get the same kind of benefits that is going to induce people to work as hard. So it's hard, if not impossible, to go back to the Reagan period and say, well, look what happened here, and we'd get the same effects going forward. Moreover, the Reagan tax cuts were related to personal income tax rates. Here we're talking about, in this particular case, eliminating the tax on dividend income, which is the benefits of which are accrued to a very small group of the population.
And how, Mark Zandi, does war figure into all this? That's not free either.
No, I'm not. War obviously is costly, and it means larger near-term deficits. But if you think that that they're going to be temporary, that our costs are going to be something this year, next, maybe 3 years, then it shouldn't be too much of a problem. I mean, we can run large deficits, very large deficits, for a short period of time with no consequent long-term ill effects. And that's what Keynes argued, and I think that's a reasonable argument, and it should be used today. We need more help from the federal government. Mm-hmm. The problem is when you have expenditures or tax cuts that have long-run implications that go well into the future and result in persistent deficits, then that's when you have problems, when you have higher interest rates, get higher interest rates in. And ultimately, those higher interest rates obviously are very hard on the economy.
Well, that's what we're looking at tonight. Mark Zandi, please stand by. We're talking about the economy, growth, jobs, and the hole in the donut, deficits. Can we have it all? War, tax cuts, deficits, and a healthy, growing economy. President Bush says lower taxes mean more growth, jobs, and revenues. Is that fuzzy math or just the thing for the U.S. economy? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
From Baltimore.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the economy, growth, jobs, and the hole in the donut, deficits, in the president's game plan for America. Here's President Bush talking last night about tax cuts as an economic stimulus.
Jobs are created when the economy grows. The economy grows when Americans have more money to spend and invest. And the best and fairest way to make sure Americans have that money is not to tax it away in the first place.
Not to tax it away in the first place, and yet can we have it all? War, tax cuts, deficits, and a healthy, growing economy. If deficits were bad in the last decade, can they be good in this decade, in the decades to come? Can we grow our way out of the Bush deficits with the tax cuts attached? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I've been joined tonight by Mark Zandi. He's chief economist with Economy.com, an internet site for economic and industry analysis. And we are joined now by Michael Mandel, joining us from Millburn, New Jersey, chief economist with Businessweek. Good evening and welcome, Michael Mandel.
Good evening, Tom. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for joining us. At Businessweek, you've been writing about this whole kind of tension over whether we can dive in here, rev up the economy, and get enough positive growth and optimism and forward momentum going to ride over these deficits. What's your view? Are we getting into a problem here, or is this just the right way to get the American economy back on track?
Well, Tom, let's look at a little bit of historical perspective here. At Business Week, one of the things we've been in favor of is growth and the belief that the economy can grow faster back going into the 90s. And there's always been a lot of skepticism about that. And I think that the president's proposal is good because it is a pro-growth proposal and because the things that he suggested are addressed to the questions of growth in the long run, which is really the important question. Now, you asked about deficits and the effect on the economy. And the fact is that there's actually far less evidence that deficits are bad than the skeptics want you to believe. If we go back to the 1980s, you mentioned the Reagan era.
Yep.
We had big deficits at the beginning in the 1980s. And you know what happened to interest rates then?
Mm.
They went down.
We remember.
Okay. In the 1990s, we ran surpluses. And do you know what happened to real interest rates then? They didn't go down. There's actually very little historical evidence that sort of convincingly says that deficits boost interest rates. Now, that doesn't mean you can run big deficits indefinitely because, you know, basically you don't want to be paying out a lot more than you're getting in. But if you have an idea that you think is going to boost growth, whether it's cutting taxes or spending more on R&D or spending more on education, it's probably a good idea to do that because it's the long-run growth that we care about.
But Michael Mandel, all through the late 80s and certainly in the 90s, we heard figure after figure in both parties stand up in Washington and say we have to battle back these deficits. These are the bane of the American economy. They're a curse and a burden. They're going to drag us down. We're going to drown. Was that all just misguided and wrong? These weren't all ash and sackcloth pessimists. These were, you know, very big figures in American politics and economics.
Yeah, well, you had a lot of ashcloth pessimists there. You remember, when we talk about the late 1980s, we're talking about a time of extreme pessimism about the U.S. future. Japan was supposed to run us over, and we were looking at slow growth for years to come. That's the sense in which people said, look, we're not going to grow. We really have to tighten our belts.
Because that would be the only way to tighten the belt.
That would be the only way. And what, you know, what the people who support deficit cutting don't tell you is that even in their models, cuts in the deficit just gives you a little bit more growth. Or to put it a different way, big deficits just cut growth by just a little bit. It doesn't have very much of an effect. And I think what you have to do is look at it in that perspective. Now, the fact is we can argue about whether or not cutting the dividend tax is going to have a big effect as Bush says it does. But the deficits are really besides the point. Frankly, I would rather have the people who don't like the Bush tax cut give me other proposals for boosting long-run growth. I'd be very happy to boost R&D. I'd be very happy to boost education. Mm. I'd be very happy to do something that gets the technology sector going. But I'm not interested in a proposal that calls for nothing but tightening our belt.
Mark Zandi, that sounds like a challenge on two fronts. First of all, Michael Mandel says deficit schmeficits, they're just not a big deal. And secondly, let's hear a better plan if you don't like this one.
Well, I think it's a rather dangerous kind of perspective. I mean, I think it was the logic that deficits do lead to higher interest rates and are bad for the economy that imposed discipline on federal policymakers, and it reaped enormous benefits, and a lot of the benefits and growth that we got in the late 1990s and around Y2K were related to the fact that we were running surpluses and we had low interest rates and
Can I stop right here? Mark, well, you know that the link between deficits and growth should not have given you the increase in growth that we saw. Only a very small portion of the increase in growth in the late 90s can be attributed to lower deficits.
Mark Zandi, do you buy that?
Well, as Michael knows, there's many factors that influence growth, one of which is interest rates, but there are many other things. And low interest rates clearly were very helpful. And it's, Michael makes it sound like this is an iconoclastic view. In fact, it's a well-accepted view. It's the view that's been expressed by most economists, including Chairman Greenspan, the three fellows that are now going to be running the economic policy among the Bush administration. This isn't something new. This is very well accepted.
And so it doesn't put you in the company of sackcloth and ash pessimists, Mark Zandi.
I don't think so. And the numbers are compelling. I mean, the best estimates we have is that every percent of GDP that's added by the deficit, you raise interest rates 25, 30, 35 basis points.
And Mark, how much effect does that have on growth long run?
Well, I think over a period of 10, 20, 30 years, it has a very substantive effect on growth.
How much effect does it have?
It reduces our standard of living. It makes life a lot more difficult.
The answer is,
it makes it probably, let me put it this way, Michael, it probably would cost about $400 billion over a 10-year period if you did the math, and that's roughly what the president wants to spend on prescription drugs.
$400 billion over a 10-year period on an economy which produces $10 trillion a year is very, very small.
It is. I mean, that's the prescription drug plan, right?
Michael Mandel,
That's not for the people. Small for the people who are going to get the prescription drugs.
Michael Mandel, let me put this to you. We're just reading today, William Gale, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institute, saying, "What we are faced with is squandering the surplus just before we're going to need it to fund the retirement of the baby boom generation." We hear about that again and again on Social Security, on Medicare. Do we not need to be in positive territory to cover that?
The only way to fund the retirement of the baby boom generation is to grow faster. Okay, the deficit, and this is going to sort of sound heretical, the deficit doesn't have very much to do with it. What we want to do is we want to have faster growth and a bigger economy so then when the baby boom generation retires, their retirement can be provided for in one way or another without hurting their children. And I'm in favor of any proposal that boosts growth.
Mark Zandi, I guess that's the point to come back to. You said earlier that you saw other stimulus packages or a package that would work better in your view. Are you talking about the Democrats' package and why?
Well, again, let's separate two things here. What we need to do in the very near term, the economy currently is struggling to grow and it needs help. And I think we do need some near-term stimulus to help the economy out, but that would be temporary. Michael's talking more about the long run. And I think he's right. We do need to talk about the kinds of things we as a people can do collectively to improve long-term growth. And I think there are many things much better than eliminating the taxation of dividend income. And I'm not against that. I think that's not a bad idea if it were designed properly. I mean, if it were deficit neutral. I mean, one thing you could do, for example, is you could eliminate taxes on dividends, but you could also eliminate all the corporate tax giveaways that many companies get and many industries get, ag subsidies, steel subsidies, all the other things that we do to subsidize the business, and that would be very therapeutic for the economy and do much more for the economy. You'd eliminate dividend taxation, you'd get rid of one of the inefficiencies in the tax code, and at the same time, you wouldn't raise a deficit, interest rates would be lower, and you'd be much better off. So there are many things we can do. I'm not suggesting otherwise.
So that might be another way. Mark Zandi, Michael Mandel, please stand by. A lot of callers want to join this conversation. We're looking at the economy, growth, jobs, and the hole in the donut, deficits, and asking what we should make of it tonight. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Joan's calling. Welcome, Joan. You're on the air.
Hi. I would like to make the point that we are considering spending $200 billion to go to war while our collective states are $50 billion in debt. And we are already seeing the effects of the deficits in this state, the shelters are losing beds. Out west, the schools are down to 4 days a week, some. And millions of Americans have no health insurance. It seems to me that we should be taking care of problems that exist in this country rather than devastating the resources of other countries.
Joan, are you saying then that the war question in your mind boils down to a financial calculation? Is that all it's about to you?
Oh, no, not at all. Obviously, the lives and the resources, the infrastructure of the of other countries.
But the president's holding up the American infrastructure and saying it's vulnerable if we don't take care of this business.
Well, actually, I don't see there being a real threat to our safety.
9/11?
I think that that is possibly a result of actions that we've already taken in the Middle Eastern countries over the past decade.
Mm-hmm. But you do worry about the effect of spending on war when there's a lot of other needs here at home. Joan, thank you for your call. Michael Mandel, how about it? Has the president bitten off more than we can chew?
I'm not going to address the security question. That's a completely different question. I do think that you can justify a bigger grant from the federal government to the state governments, because I think that's one place where the president's program was lacking. It makes sense to transfer money to the state and local governments so they don't have to do big cuts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with
Mark
that.
Cindy.
I mean, that's one of the major parts of the Democratic stimulus plan that they've put forward. In fact, it's the most costly part of their plan, and it makes perfect sense. State governments are in the midst of the worst budget crisis they've probably ever experienced. They're cutting payrolls. They're cutting benefits. It's serious. It's from coast to coast. It's not just a few states.
And it's just when need is growing. Mark Zandi, Michael Mandel, stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation Robert Bixby. He's executive director of the Concord Coalition, a nonpartisan grassroots organization dedicated to educating the public about federal budget issues. Good evening and welcome, Robert Bixby.
Hi, how are you?
We're fine, thanks. We're looking at the deficit that's growing out of current economic policy in the U.S., and the debate we're in the midst of here tonight is whether or not it matters. Michael Mandel with Business Week is saying, come on, growth is what matters. We can grow our way through this. Let's not be pessimists. Mark Zandi says, yes, we can grow, but watch out. The deficit can come back and bite us. You've been fierce opponents of the deficit at the Concord Coalition. Are you still so fiercely opposed to a deficit when the economy's back on its heels?
I think you have to draw a distinction between short-term and long-term. I don't think you would find too many people, myself included, that would say that this year's deficit is a problem. But what is a problem is the fact that we have much higher and permanent long-term deficits that have been projected recently. I mean, the new release today by the Congressional Budget Office shows bigger deficits than were a couple of years ago. So I wouldn't say that we suddenly have to raise taxes and slash spending this year to try to balance the budget. What I would say is that Congress and the president ought to try to get us back on a course where we're headed back towards a balance or a surplus as the economy recovers.
Do you see the Bush policy putting us on that track to both spark growth and get us back toward a balanced budget?
No, I don't. I think that if you think that stimulus is needed up front, it has very little of that. And there's a question. You're going to get different opinions from lots of credible economists as to whether or not stimulus is needed. But whether or not it is, there's not much short-term stimulus in the Bush plan, and they don't say that it is. They're intending it to be a long-term growth plan. But those the big costs come in, the later years. We've already got a big tax cut that was enacted 2 years ago that's going to be eating into the budget over the long term. So it looks to me more like if that were passed, would be making it much more difficult to get back to fiscal balance anytime before the boomers begin to retire, because the real fiscal challenge comes in the following decade.
Michael Mandel, is this just more grim naysaying, or do you hear something you can agree with?
I still don't hear a plan for growth. What I hear a plan for is tightening our belt and then sort of divvying up whatever small amount is left in the future. And what the history of budget projections is that over the last 20 years, they've been consistently wrong. Either they've been too high or too low. And the fact is that budgets, budget projections are really dominated by growth projections.
But what sort of growth do you expect to get from this tax cut? That's what I don't hear from the.
I think that you can. That there's a good justification that if you lower the taxes on capital, that you could expect to get more investment. But frankly, I'm not wedded to this plan. What I'd like to hear is a growth-enhancing plan. You can't beat something with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'd like to hear a growth-enhancing plan from the opponents of this, enhancing long-term growth, which is
Michael, there is.
Mark Zandi?
There is. Like, the Democrats have come forward with a pure stimulus plan. It's temporary.
Wait a second. I'm not interested in short-term
stuff. Fundamentally, at the heart of what they're saying to you and to all of us is that fundamentally this economy is sound. Productivity growth is strong.
Mm-hmm.
Interest rates are low. This economy is going to generate plenty of growth just as long as we remain remain disciplined
in terms of our
fiscal policies.
And we have
a problem in the near term. We need to get the economy going, and here it is. We're going to do some temporary things to get this economy going, and once we get going, and we're confident that we will, but we're going to give you a little bit of help to get it going a little bit sooner. Once we get going, this economy is going to be just fine, and we are going to create jobs, and we are going to create growth, and
Michael Mandel, that portrays the Democrats as the real optimists here.
They are.
They're saying fundamentally this economy is in great shape. We can get a lot of things done. We just got to get going.
Michael Mandel,
do you believe that, Mark?
I do. I absolutely do.
If you run back 5 years, okay, or 10 years, would you have said the same thing?
Same thing.
Yeah, that the economy was in good shape.
5 years ago, yeah.
10 years ago?
10 years ago.
See, what I think is that we should be doing everything we can to boost the growth of the long-term growth of the economy and sitting on our hands and saying that everything's going to be just fine.
Robert Bixby, we've just got you for another minute here. What's your answer?
What I'm going to say is, I mean, we do have the experience of the 90s, and people said, you shouldn't worry about deficits. They said that in the late 80s or 90s, and we had a couple of presidents that did worry about deficits, and we had a deficit reduction plan, and we had 10 years of growth after that. So, I mean, I don't think that worrying about deficits is not, you know, it's not a bad growth plan. I agree with Mark that you might be able, you know, to get some short-term growth by doing a stimulus plan. I'm not sure that it's necessary, but I certainly wouldn't oppose it.
And long-term growth, do we need
deliberately
steps?
Going deliberately into big deficits in the name of growth doesn't strike me as a very rational plan.
Well, there is the debate all laid out. Robert Bixby, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Robert Bixby is executive director of the Concord Coalition. He joined us tonight from his home in Virginia. We're talking about the economy, growth, jobs, and the hole in the donut, deficits. We're looking at the president's game plan for America. What do you think? Do the president's numbers add up to you? Do they add up to economic growth? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined tonight by Mark Zandi, Chief Economist for Economy.com, and Michael Mandel, Chief Economist with Business Week. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the economy, growth, jobs, and the hole in the donut deficits. Do they matter? Our guests tonight are Mark Zandi, Chief Economist with Economy.com, and Michael Mandel, Chief Economist with Business Week. You are welcome to join us as well. Can we have it all? War, tax cuts, deficits, and a healthy, growing economy. Where, when does the U.S. economy come roaring back? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Tom's calling from Erie, Pennsylvania. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
The answer is no, we cannot have it all. I've been a registered Republican for the 34 years that I've been old enough to vote.
All right.
And I'm telling you that I've known this man was going to be a problem since before he was elected.
This man being George W. Bush.
You got it.
Why?
Because he started out with $73 million in his campaign war chest. The people that put that money there expected something in return for it, and he's paying them off right now. Common sense logic tells you that if you put all of the liquid capital the liquid, the disposable capital in the hands of the top 1 to 10% of the people in our socioeconomic system, they cannot possibly consume enough to keep this economy going.
So, Republican Tom from Erie, if you're not confident we can have it all, what would you let go of on the president's buffet?
What would I let go of? I'd let go of the tax cut.
Okay.
Tax cuts for nobody, I'd say, because there's a big bill coming up with this war, and I agree with him. The war is needed. If something's not done about Saddam Hussein now, we're going to wind up paying in a much more bloody fashion in the future.
But Tom,
you can't have both.
Tom, stick with us. Michael Mandel, your response.
Well, I think that that part of the point is that if you put money into people's pocket, in fact, they don't spend it, they invest it. And that ultimately is more productive for the economy. You know, it's always an interesting question about what happens in terms of the income inequality with something like this. And my view is that as long as you get growth and as long as you're helping the people at the bottom, that an increase in income inequality is not such a big problem.
I guess I didn't hear Tom complaining about income inequality, simply expressing doubt that the top tier would be lively enough to invest all that extra cash.
Well, no, he said they won't be lively enough to consume it, which they're not going to consume it. They're going to invest it. You know, I think that one of the problems that people have is they think of the economy in terms of a fixed pie. And if you think of it in terms of something that can grow, something that can be stimulated, then it sort of starts to make more sense. Pulling in your belt, not investing, can lead you to be worse off.
Tom, are you a fixed pie guy in Erie, Pennsylvania?
Pardon me?
Are you a fixed pie man there?
No, I'm not. But I think there's a lot of things that these gentlemen aren't considering. First of all, the people that we're talking about that live off their dividends, wealthy people, first of all, they got spoiled by 20% returns during the 1990s, the late 90s. Okay, They have made so much money that they don't have any need right now to risk any capital any further. They don't have a need to. They've got scared so much that their mega fortunes were threatened so badly with the collapse of the stock market.
But they're hunkering down, not investing. Tom, we've got it, and thank you so much for your call. Mark Zandi, what do you make of it? If we cut the taxes for that tier where the tax cuts are largely focused now, does that get us investment and growth?
Well, I think there's a better way to get the benefits that we're trying to get from the elimination of dividend taxation. The benefits are twofold. First, the idea is that it will make it less likely that businesses will use debt to finance themselves. And that's generally thought to be a good thing if a company's over-leveraged, if it has too much debt.
And there's a lot of debt out there right now in corporate land.
Yeah, it'll perform poorly in weak economies like we're seeing right now. The other argument, and I think it's a reasonable one, is that you'll get some benefit in the form of better corporate governance. But both those goals, very laudable objectives, can be accomplished much more efficiently, effectively, and indeed fairly by giving that benefit directly to U.S. corporations. U.S. corporations now are able to deduct interest expense from their income. They should be able to deduct the dividend payouts as well and put them on the same basis. And if we did that, I think that would make a lot more sense. And if we coupled all of that with the elimination of all the various corporate tax giveaways, subsidies that we give to specific companies and to very small specific industries, I think that would be a great long-term growth plan that would do all the things that Michael would like to see. It would be equitable, and it would benefit us all. But the way this plan is currently designed, it's just not going to work, and it's not going to get the benefits that anyone wants. And it is inequitable because the benefits do accrue to a very small sliver of the population.
But that might be another way. Scott's calling from Brookline, Massachusetts. Hi, Scott. You're on the air.
Hi, folks. I'd like to make a couple of observations.
Please.
One of them is that if the dividend portion of this tax cut plan had been structured in the manner that the fellow just spoke suggested, I think that you would have heard people really kicking the crap out of President Bush as, you know, somebody who's in the pockets of the corporations and really just trying to do more corporate giveaways.
If the break went straight to the corporations.
If the break went straight to the corporation.
Right.
This way people recognize that, you know, it is going to benefit individuals and it will encourage people to invest in stocks that do pay dividends.
And what about your view on the bigger question of deficits, Scott?
Well, Look, Deficits Act is a great restraint on fiscal on government spending, and I think that that is always necessary. The suggestion that we should be spending the money to bail out state governments by sending them money is just incredibly inefficient, and not only that, but it removes the moral hazard that increasing taxation and increasing government spending should carry with it.
So you're describing the Bush deficits as a kind of deliberate roadblock, and we've heard this. To more government spending.
I'm not sure that it is intended as a deliberate roadblock. I think that President Bush has a serious incentive to make sure that the economy is stimulated as best he can and as best as it's politically feasible, because it's in his interest to show that that is happening, because he's coming up for re-election in the next couple of years. Mm. When you look at the incentives that people have, he does have a serious incentive to get the economy going again, whereas people who are arguing against his plan might have a serious incentive to keep things tamped down until the next election.
Scott, we've got it. Michael Mandel, how about this issue of deficits as a laudable, positive break on public spending?
I wouldn't necessarily call it laudable, but I think it does tend to act as a break. I'd like to see more types of public spending, as I've sort of said, on stuff like R&D and education and things that are potentially growth enhancing. I do agree with the caller that. That, you know, you can't just sort of look at the deficit and sort of say, oh, this is going to sort of be a bad thing. It has a lot of different effects.
Is it so efficient to bail out state and local governments, or is that economic stimulus in itself,
I think it's economic stimulus, and I think that, you know, it may be inefficient, and efficiency is not the point when you're sort of doing short-run stimulus. It is the point when you're worrying about long-run growth.
Jeff's calling from Newport, Rhode Island. Hi, Jeff. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Fine. Let's look at the word confidence, and what we can have confidence in. That's what the stock market goes on. That's what business goes on.
And not going so well right now.
And that's what individuals go on. And I'd like to hear a discussion about confidence rooted in common sense. And simply the common sense is that the last time around, the president said, we have huge surpluses. Well, we certainly can't have any confidence in projections or budgets or whatever is going to happen down
the
road.
Those are gone.
No confidence. And that's just the facts of the game. But if we could have confidence that in bad times, we did in fact cut taxes to stimulate, but that in good times, the president says, I'll just make one quick point and then listen. The president said that it's our money, it's your money, and we have too much of it, and we should give it back. Mm-hmm. What was not mentioned, even by the Democrats, was that it's also our deficit, and we have to pay it back. And if we did pay it back, we'd save, I'm not sure, but it's between 25 and 33% of the tax dollar goes to paying the interest on the deficit.
Well,
imagine if we could save that.
There it goes. We own the cash and we own the deficit. Mark Zandi, wrap-up thought here. We've just got half a minute left. Has President Bush bitten off too much, or might this pull through to the growth that's going to overcome the deficits that are now there?
Well, I think what's going to happen is that the president's going to realize that the economy is having difficulty, that we do need some help in the form of various kinds of fiscal stimulus, some tax cuts, some help to state governments. And he's going to come to terms with the Democrats, and we are going to get a package. Probably get it sooner rather than later, probably sometime in March or April. So I do think that there's a lot of posturing and positioning here, but ultimately everyone in Washington is going to come to some kind of agreement, and we are going to get a package that's going to help this economy in the near term.
And Michael Mandel, we've just got 15 seconds. I'm sorry, but what's your level of confidence about where we're headed?
Well, I think Bush proposed a program that was aimed for long-term growth, and I'd love to see other people do the same.
It sounds like we will have a conversation about that. What comes out of it, we'll have to watch and see. Michael Mandel, chief economist at Businessweek, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Glad to be here.
And Mark Zandi, chief economist with Economy.com, terrific to have you. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, it was a pleasure.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Just click on Forums. In a moment, an inline skating tour of China. This is On Point. Thank you. When Peter Williams moved from St. Louis to Zhengshan, China in 1994 to teach golf at one of the communist nation's first country clubs, he fell in love with his adopted home. So in an effort to see more of China, he decided to take a 2,300-mile journey from Hong Kong to Beijing on inline skates. Williams used the trip to raise money for underprivileged Chinese youth. In this radio diary, Williams says what struck him most during his expedition was the juxtaposition of China's huge modern cities with its small and primitive villages.
I saw a little bit of everything along the way. The eastern coast of China is a very developed area. All of the big cities all are now like Western cities, which they weren't when I first came here. But in between, life is still like it was probably 50 years ago. People still do things by hand. They still farm by hand. They still build things by hand. They still do things like I imagine people did in America a long time back. So along the way, people are outside drying vegetables out in the villages, pushing cartloads of coal to take to their homes. It's a very rural life, and it's a simple kind of life that maybe a lot of people in America don't get a chance to see too much. It was actually quite amazing, the reaction I got from the people. Arriving in a town of 300 or 400 people, and almost the entire town would come out from the stores and from the fields, and they'd rush to the side of the street to come see who's this guy arriving in their town. At times it was a little bit overwhelming. If I stopped at any little store to buy a drink of water, I'd be surrounded by 200 people barraging me with questions. Who are you? What are you doing here? What is going on? They'd want to come up and touch my hair and touch my arm and try out my skates. And it was probably as interesting for me as it was for them. Many of the people in China have never seen Westerners at all. In these smaller towns, they've seen television, but they've never seen a Westerner up close. And to get a chance to see a Westerner, and then I'm on in this strange outfit and with spandex shorts on. And I became the talk of the town often when I arrived in a small town, that's for sure. What I learned about China was really, if you look back over the past 50 years in China, there was the largest country in the world. There was nobody that the rest of the world knew. There was no internationally famous scientists, doctors, artists. And that's not because the people of China aren't talented. The people of China are very talented. But for a very long time, they haven't been able to show a lot of their talents. They grew up in a time when you don't act different. You don't dress differently. You don't behave differently. You don't talk differently. That idea doesn't exist anymore. Now, young people want to take their bicycle and paint it all bright colors. They want to try out new sports. They want to dye their hair blue. Now, you see a country where there's a real energy to the people. And in every town I went to, people have a great fascination for new things and new ideas, and you see people really coming to life. And to me, that's a lot of fun to see that.
St. Louis native Peter Williams lives in Zhongshan, China. He inline skated across China, 2,300 miles. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This is WBUR.